Hi, welcome to our lunchtime date together with me, John Ballum. I am an organizational development consultant, I'm an educator, and I'm a coach with a passion for lifelong learning. With me today is my partner in crime, Gifty.
Hi everyone, I'm Gifty Parker, HR professional with a background in learning and development, performance management, as well as talent management.
So for the next 20 minutes, we invite you to sit back, find a glass of something nice, and enjoy an unusual conversation with us.
Well, for our aspiring entrepreneurial listeners, so if we were to break these things down for them into steps, you know,
right,
those essential steps that they should take to actually launch a startup, and drawing back on some of the things we've already said, how important is market research in this process?
Okay. So when an entrepreneur wants to launch, I think one of the first steps to get kind of the very first thing to be clear about is, what is your existing skill set? Where do you have deeper industry knowledge in what area than most people do, than the average person? Because I think that's so important, because you've got to get behind a product or service that you really feel something for. And if you've had some experience in that field and you feel passionately about it, you've already got a knowledge base there that you can lean on. It's not the only thing you're going to need, but it's one of the first things. I have seen many entrepreneurs crash and burn with the franchise model, where, for example, somebody reaches, let's say, middle age, or even when they're younger, they have some disposable income and they, you know, get exposed to some marketing, which says, come be a baker, or come, you know, make beer, and buy into this franchise. We'll give you all the training. But they've never had contact with this industry in their lives before. And I've seen crash and burn there, and I can tell you real horror stories. And because they've never had experience there, they don't understand any the industry at any depth, but neither do they have the values maybe that are associated with that industry, or really have a passion about it, besides that they've been told they can make thousands of dollars. So I think that is very important. You've got to do what's in your core capabilities and core interest areas. You go too far outside of that, and you're going to lose focus, and you're going to find you can't do this, no matter how intelligent you are. So I think that's number one, the essential step. And then the other piece of market research is what you've alluded to, is I think you've got to understand, with that deep industry knowledge, the market you're in, the kind of competitive forces that are out there, and let's put it this way, the road bumps that are in that market. Because every industry has particular difficulties that it's got to overcome. And you've got to decide whether you have the capacity, or can hire the capacity, or through your network find the capacity to deal with some of those that you can't. But essentially, you've got to be able to deal with the major speed bumps. Okay, you have got to be able to, because of your previous experience, know, this is how it goes down in this field. This is what happens in this field of work. Yeah. So for example, if you work in health and safety, let's say, for example, you start a health and safety company, one of the things you've got to prepare for is sometimes a high degree of litigation in that field. In other words, accidents happen and things go wrong. And are you prepared to face that? Are you prepared to be in that? Do you know how to prepare yourself so that you are insured against it? So that's the understanding. And then does come some nuts and bolts finances. You're going to look at your finances, and one of the classic pitfalls of most businesses, entrepreneurial businesses, are undercapitalized. And you've got to say, how much am I going to do? How fast am I going to grow? And have I got the capacity to do that? Because the last thing you want to do is sound cheap as an entrepreneur. So even if you set your goals a little lower and you have a few less services and you're not promising to be the world, then you come across as credible. And I want to tell you, it's a terrible story, this, but it illustrates this quite clearly. I was involved with a wannabe entrepreneur a couple of years ago in a coaching capacity, and he set himself up to be an environmental consultant, although he had no background in environmental management. But he believed he was smart, which he's very bright. and then he could read up the necessary stuff, package it in a way, and huck this to people. And he positioned himself as this mega organization, you know. So he called his office the worldwide headquarters. That was him and a fax machine and a phone. Well, so this kind of megalomaniacal, like, because he wanted to impress people. And then what happened was some very high-profile group got a hold of him, and they asked him to do a presentation on some highly academic aspect of environmental management. And he phoned me in a cold sweat, because he didn't have the academic background to be able to do this. Could I help him? And I said, sorry, no. You know, this would take me hours to research this. And anyway, it would be false because you would be talking about essentially what I told you to say and you don't know. But, you know, he decided, no, he's going to do this. And so he cobbled together this, like, really, really, I'm saying pathetic, it sounds terrible, but it was very substandard paper. He went to present this and it was a total failure. I mean, he was just eaten alive by the participants. So all these, you know, high profile academics and people that ran these major consultancies. And he just ran out of there like with dog with his tail between his legs, you know. So I think you've got to take a long, and how big you want to see a sound. You don't want to sound too big if you ain't that big, you know.
I agree.
And so those would be some of the steps I think are there. And then lastly, I want to just add your branding. Okay. So you've got to think about, you know, how do you want to be perceived in the market? And from how you set up your website to how you communicate publicly, you know, how do you want people to see you? For example, you have a very highly polished professional, you know, brand image, which I've always thought is phenomenal, you know, and your be interesting for me for you to tell listeners about your logo, because I've been fascinated by this logo for years. Yes, and I have all sorts of things floating in my mind, you know. So you've obviously thought very carefully about. So yeah, that would be some of the things I would say about this. I mean, your ad list.
Thank you so much, Lorna. Those are really great tips. And I'm actually glad you asked about the logo, because during which was last year, our celebration of the Pride Month, people tend to ask me about the logo because it's a colorful one. But the honest truth behind the logo was, during my research, it was really important the color of your brand and what that color represented. And I've always been somebody who likes flashy things. So when you ask me what's my favorite color, I tend to pause, because I never could say what my favorite color is, because it would depend on the mood, the context, and what exactly is it. So it was always an interesting thing. So when I wanted a logo, I remember working with a lady from Sri Lanka, and she was giving me different ideas. But I couldn't make one decision because I had 2, 3, 4 logo highlights, and putting them together didn't really speak to me. And I asked her, would it be possible to give me a sample with all the colors that you have?
And
she looked at me very strangely, but it was just very important for me to be inclusive. Mm-hmm. I didn't want a color that spoke sort of positively on one area and then not necessarily positively on a color that wasn't balanced. So I said, okay, let's just put all the colors in there. And surprisingly, we came up with 2 variations, and it was very interesting. Even now we are in the process of changing our logo, which will be for next year, but we still keep the multiple colors. But the logo will be changing in 2014. So that's the story. So during the Pride Month, we don't need to change anything because our logo is already with multiple colors.
That's beautiful. Yeah, the inclusivity of your logo has really spoken.
I agree.
Wonderful. So that's a great example of what entrepreneurs can think carefully about.
Yeah.
So what about funding, Gifty? I mean, I want to ask you about funding. Is a question I have.
Oh, yes.
It's a major concern for startups. What that entrepreneurs have, you know, but most people just think the bank, right? But let's talk a little broader than just going to the bank for a big loan. Yeah. So what funding options do you see available?
Absolutely. And you know about funding, actually, the funding aspect, which is really, really a major concern for a lot of startups. It's linked to also this market research we talked about. So I'm going to come back
and talk a little bit about some software, some tools that
entrepreneurs
or those who want to consider this can look into when doing market research, because it's a crucial process.
Yes.
And this market research also becomes really, really crucial, because that will also support you in understanding the type of funding that are available there for you. A lot of people, funding, the availability of funding would really depend on the type of business that you have, on the type of audience that you have, and so on and so forth. And of course, the type of processes or product you have.
Yep.
A very good example, recently, my admin and I, we were researching, market research, we were researching funding that are available to us, because they are government-funded opportunities. Right. And we're looking into government fundings, and we also had to understand how we present ourselves, because there were some fundings that were available to a B2C, and there were some fundings that were available to a B2B. So business to business, which is Packer HR, my company, there were some fundings that I was entitled to, which are fewer than those who are actually dealing directly with consumers.
Right.
So it's really important to do that research. But yes, I always say at that beginning, money becomes a very crucial thing.
So
you want to be very, very sort of prepared for that aspect and be very transparent when you are answering questions or providing information about your projections or about your expenses. Yeah.
Right.
Leverage government support, and quite a few of them available that people are not aware of. So go for grant writing workshops. We actually run grant writing workshops for one of our clients in Ontario. Attend grant writing workshops that are specific to your business.
Right.
Also, another way would be also considering partners that you can collaborate with. And we actually do this as well, because not only are we not able to attend to all the needs of our clients, but we can partner with somebody else. So we still have some sort of income coming into our business, but we don't have to bear all the costs of delivering that service.
Right.
Partnering is also another good thing. And another sort of way to actually get funding would be, of course, going to the bank.
Yes.
Going to the bank is another good way. And going to the bank will also be shaped a lot by collateral that you have. So you would definitely need to have collateral, which may not be available to all those who are starting from the beginning.
Right.
The banks would like to have some sort of a collateral. But I'm going to go into a few simple ones that you can just do by just having technology, your laptop, your phone.
Yes.
Crowdfunding. I find a lot of mentees I've worked with have actually talked about how they've used crowdfunding, which is a platform that allows entrepreneurs to raise money, from individuals who may have similar interests or maybe want to assess your product. So crowdfunding is one that is as simple as setting an account and being able to comfortably write about your business. So that goes a long way. So apart from going for government fundings, there are also grants and subsidies, especially if you're based in BC.
Yes.
For example, this summer, I was able to get a grant from the government to bring in a youth to work for our organization. Now, these are examples of ways that you don't need to spend, but you could get to invest in your business. Venture capital is another example. And a lot of people use what we refer to as angel investors. So these are just people who want to exchange ownership, so you can use those as well if you have any existing debts that you want to carry. But these are some ways. But the most important one, starting up, you couldn't really finance yourself, which is what I did at the beginning. Because at the beginning, I gave free services where I wanted to get the clients to come in. And a lot of that had to do with me actually sort of using my own funds, my own personal saving, contributing it into the business, and also getting your family involved as well as some other ways to do it. So those are some ideas that I've actually used, and they've been very, very helpful. The government, crowdfunding, angel investors, self-financing yourself. And of course, if you have collateral, consider going to the banks. Or if you have a product that you feel is really essential out there, the government will be able to fund you at a very low collateral.
Yeah, right. So
that's some options.
Lovely. One of the other things I want to ask you about, I mean, it's something that mightily impressed me as we've engaged together. You know, to do the work you do, you occasionally need like a great office space. Now, we all understand that we'd have to work, the hybrid model allows us to work from home and people are quite comfortable working from home. But sometimes, you know, if you articulate it, clients need to meet you in Vancouver and you found a really great solution with the kind of office space that you hired. I thought it was totally credible. It fitted with your image. It also was a great service to your clients. And this is a new kind of product, a new way of thinking. Before an entrepreneur goes and takes a lot of money and pays a huge amount for rental in a really substandard building often, let's talk about what you've done, because I really like this is a great tool, one of the great
Absolutely. So what we do at Packer HR Solution is we do, I think a lot of people use different terminology. You can call it office sharing, you can call it core networking, co-working, all sort of options. And why this is actually very good for small businesses, not just a startup. Small businesses are most importantly a startup will be, it actually gives you the opportunity to target or tailor what you want to your current budget. So you have everything from company helping you with all your mailing services, helping you with all your meetings and reservation, areas where you work. So for us, for instance, we do have hybrid work. And we have people who want to be around other individual at work. They want to go to work at a certain time, go away, connect, network. So you can find a space where you can have all the services given to you and you're not putting a huge amount of money down every month. Also tailored to when you need them. For instance, when I had a meeting the other day, it was in our location downtown. Where all we had to do is reserve our meeting room. Same thing, if I have training, reserve it. If I feel like I'm going to be in the office a lot more certain time of the year, I just simply book the office space, depending on how many people will be sharing the space with me. I can tailor that to my own needs. And that becomes really essential as a startup because you will be reducing that overhead cost, right? So simply, and again, it would depend a lot on the type of service that you have. For us, B2B, we don't really meet our clients all the time, but when we do, we may need the services around telephone, amenities, comfort, all those things you could get on demand when you need them. So that way, reducing cost in terms of having them and not necessarily using them. So that's absolutely been a great first quarter for us at Packer HR. And we've been doing that, we've been doing that since the pandemic hit. And that's planned to keep. Luckily for us, most of our employees work remotely, but those who want to work hybrid, there's the opportunity to do that. And we're not really breaking the bank when we do that, right? So we save money.
Yeah, no, it's phenomenal. And I think it's there are many cost-saving ways entrepreneurs can budget in ways that are really intelligent, that are actually good for their clients and don't make them look cheap, because that environment you've got there certainly doesn't make you look cheap. And I think, it's about our clients' comfort as well, relative to the industry.
I agree. I absolutely agree.
Until next time, this is Gift Parker and John Ballen.
Remember, during your busy week ahead, stay good, stay true, and stay beautiful.
Bye-bye.